Now, glittering particles swirl.
Mutation. It is the key to our evolution. It has enabled us to evolve from a single-celled organism into the dominant species on the planet. This process is slow, normally taking thousands and thousands of years. But every few hundred millennia, evolution leaps forward.
Five streams of particles converge into an explosion of white-hot light. Now our view careens down a spinal column. We tunnel through rings of yellow light into a matrix of bundled nerve cords. An electrical charge shoots through the matrix, and we race past bonded molecules. Beyond the molecules, white-hot squiggles form an exploding ball of light. 20th Century Fox presents, in association with Marvel Entertainment Group, X-Men. Now, the round lock on a steel door rotates around a tiny blue lens. We pass through the lens and come out at a muddy path, pockmarked by heavy drops of rain. Men and women slowly shuffle through the mud. Inside a low brick tower, a soldier wearing a pith helmet holds a gun and looks out over a ledge. A title appears, Poland, 1944. Beyond the soldier's tin mug and coffee pot, huddling people shuffle through the downpour on a path fenced in by barbed wire. A limping man with a yellow Star of David sewn on his jacket glances over at his teenage son, who exchanges a pained look with his mother. A drenched scarf covers her dark hair. The boy, water dripping from his cap, looks to his right. A wraith-like man wearing a striped prison uniform pushes a wheelbarrow. Blandly, the boy stares at a number tattooed on the man's forearm. Another prisoner with a drawn and ashen face bends down and shovels. Now, soldiers shove their way against the crowd, roughly separating out some men who stumble in the mud. The limping man and his wife cling to the boy as the crowd leads them on toward the soldiers. Squinting in the gray downpour, the boy yells as his parents are shoved into another line. Screaming, his mother struggles with a young soldier. His father raises one hand as soldiers spin the boy around and push him away. Breaking from the muddled ranks, his mother runs, clawing at the air. The boy's father holds her back, covers her mouth, and draws her away. Crouched in an alcove, the boy weeps, then gets up and staggers toward heavy iron gates laced with barbed wire. The massive gates close, cutting him off from his parents. A soldier grabs him around the waist, then gestures for another soldier to come help. The boy, his pained eyes fixed on the gates, holds out his hand. The gates shudder. Soldiers slip in the mud as they try to pull the boy away. More soldiers rush in and pick the boy up. As he reaches out, the gates bend toward him, straining against an iron lock bar. Four soldiers hold the screaming boy, digging their boots into the mud as they're drawn toward the gates. The metal doors start to bend open. Scowling, a fifth soldier thrusts his rifle butt and knocks the boy unconscious. The soldiers fall in the mud. One stands up, backing away. Awestruck, he glances from the boy's pale, bruised face, spattered with rain, to the mangled iron gates twisted on their hinges. Beyond the gates, a brick smokestack rises into the white sky. Now, sunshine warms a clapboard house. Words appear, Meridian, Mississippi, the not-too-distant future. Inside, a woman plays piano. In an upstairs bedroom, a teenage girl kneels on a bed and points to a wall map. She smiles down at a dark-haired boy.
Niagara Falls, up the Canadian Rockies, and then it's only a few hundred miles to Anchorage.
You don't want to be kind of cold?
Well, that's the point, stupid. Otherwise, it wouldn't be an adventure.
And when are you going to do this?
I don't know. After high school, before college.
Shyly, her deep brown eyes search his face. The boy smiles and she looks away, then turns back with a grin. He moves closer, resting on his elbows. As he slowly brings his lips toward hers, she stares intently at his smooth-skinned face. Gently, the teenagers kiss. The boy's eyes open as veiny ridges branch across his face. She shoves him away, and his eyes roll back in his head. The girl backs away from the bed as the boy gasps, his eyes fixed on the ceiling. His parents rush in.
Marie!
I don't know what happened.
David?
I don't know. I just touched him. I didn't mean to.
Call an ambulance.
Just touch me!
You call an ambulance?
Now at the Capitol building.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are now seeing the beginnings of another stage of human evolution. These mutations manifest at puberty and are often triggered by periods of heightened emotional stress.
Thank you, Miss Gray. It was quite educational. However, it fails to address the issue that is the focus of this hearing. Three words. Are mutants dangerous?
I'm afraid that's an unfair question, Senator Kelly. After all, the wrong person behind the wheel of a car can be dangerous.
Well, we do license people to drive.
Yes, but not to live. Senator, it is a fact that mutants who have come forward and revealed themselves publicly have been met with fear, hostility, even violence. It is because of that ever-present hostility that I am urging the Senate to vote against mutant registration. To force mutants to expose themselves will only further
expose themselves? What is it the mutant community has to hide, I wonder, that makes them so afraid to identify themselves?
I didn't say they were hiding.
Well, let me show you what is being hidden, Miss Gray. I have here a list of names of identified mutants living right here in the United States.
Senator
Kelly. Here's a girl in Illinois who can walk through walls. Now, what's to stop her from walking into a bank vault or into the White House or into their houses?
Senator Kelly.
And there are even rumors, Miss Gray, of mutants so powerful that they can enter our minds and control our thoughts, taking away our God-given free will. I think the American people deserve the right to decide whether they want their children to be in school with mutants, to be taught by mutants. Ladies and gentlemen, the truth is that mutants are very real, and they are among us. We must know who they are, and above all, we must know what they can do.
In a crowded auditorium, Senator Kelly's lip curls with satisfaction. Behind him, the long-legged Dr. Gray remains at a podium wearing a red skirt and jacket. In an upper balcony, a bald man with an angular face glances around with a pained expression, then follows a gray-haired man in a black overcoat who dons a fedora hat and makes his way out to an airy walkway, sealed by glass and white X-shaped girders.
Eric.
The man in black stops.
What are you doing here? Why do you ask questions to which you already know the answers? Don't give up on them, Eric. What would you have me do, Charles? I've heard these arguments before. It was a long time ago. Mankind has evolved since then.
Yes. Into us.
Charles stares from his wheelchair at Eric's back. Eric reaches for his ear.
You're sneaking around in here, Charles. Whatever are you looking for?
Slowly, Eric turns around. Icy blue eyes peer out from his narrow, careworn face.
I'm looking for hope.
I will bring you hope, old friend. And I ask only one thing in return. Don't get in my way.
He touches his hat brim, then narrows his eyes and strides away.
We are the future, Charles, not them. They no longer matter.
Charles frowns. Now, at night, a semi-truck slows to a stop. Words appear, Northern Alberta, Canada. Marie, the teenaged girl, naps in the passenger seat. The driver opens her door.
This is it.
Wearing a long hooded coat, she grabs a duffel bag and climbs down as the beefy driver locks the truck.
Where are we? I thought you said you were going to take me as far as Laughlin City.
This is Laughlin City.
Headlights sweep her pale face as she stares at a building the size of an airport hangar. Now, inside, a fire burns in an oil drum. Wide-eyed, Marie makes her way through crowded shadows to a room-sized cage under stark light. A man crashes against the fencing and drops to the floor. Then two guys drag him out. A bare-chested man with black hair stands with his muscled back to the crowd, one hand gripping the cage wire. A chubby man with a plaid jacket steps in with a microphone. A brawny man with a shaved head strides into the cage.
Ladies and gentlemen, our savior!
Whatever you do, don't hit him in the balls.
You said anything goes.
Anything goes, but he'll take it personal.
Punching the air, the challenger dances over and kicks the black-haired man from behind, knocking him against the cage and spinning him around. He lands a left hook and a right hook, dropping him on all fours, then kicks him in the ribs. Marie looks on in horror. Scowling, the black-haired man rises and blocks a punch with his fist, then swings with his right, hurling his challenger across the cage.
Ladies and gentlemen, tonight's winner and still king of the cage, the Wolverine.
Brooding, Wolverine resumes his pose, leaning against the cage wall. As he lights up a cigarette, Marie's eyes search his rugged face, framed by long black sideburns. Later, as club workers sweep up, the chubby man counts money at the bar. Marie casts a worried glance at the truck driver, who sleeps on a bench. She and the bartender eye a jar full of money that reads, "Tipping is not a city in China."
Find something new, honey? You're sticking with water.
He slides the tip jar away from her. Above the bar, an animal skin lies on top of a television. Wolverine walks in and takes a seat.
I'll have a beer.
His dark brow arched in a scowl, he puffs on a cigar and looks at her, then turns away as her smooth, beseeching face peeks out from under her hood.
Ellis Island, once the arrival point of hundreds of thousands of American immigrants, is opening its doors again. Preparations are nearly completed for the upcoming United Nations World Summit. Nearly every invitation confirmed. The event promises to be the largest single gathering of world leaders in history. The leaders of over 200 nations will discuss issues ranging from the world's economic climate and weapons treaties to the mutant phenomenon and its impact on our world stage.
Wolverine and Marie stare at the television, then exchange a glance. Her eyes widen as the burly challenger taps Wolverine's shoulder.
You owe me some money.
Come on, let's do it. Let's not do this.
No man takes a beating like that without a mark to show for it.
Come on, buddy, this isn't going to be worth it.
I know what you are.
You lost your money, you keep this up, you lose something else.
The brawny man turns to leave, then pulls a knife.
Look out!
Three knife blades shoot out from each of Wolverine's clenched hands. He holds the razor-sharp points to the man's neck. The bartender presses a shotgun against Wolverine's temple.
Get out of my bar, freak.
The truck driver sits up on one elbow, and Marie locks her frightened eyes on the frozen man. Wolverine swings his free arm behind him, slicing the shotgun in two. Buckshot sprays through the air. Pinning his attacker with one set of blades, Wolverine reaches back to the wide-eyed bartender with the other. The knife blades retract into his fists, and he lowers his arms, shrugging his leather jacket back into place. The bartender, unsteady on his feet, watches Wolverine stride out of the bar. Marie swallows and glances around at the stunned men, then grabs her duffel bag and leaves. Outside, Wolverine strides across the snow and climbs into a pickup truck with a camper on the bed and a small two-wheeled trailer in tow. He turns the key. With a cigar clenched in his mouth, he makes a fist and rubs his knuckles, touching the space in between. Later, the camper moves down a two-lane highway lined with tall pine trees. In the distance, snow-capped mountains rise into a cloudy sky. Dim light casts a bluish glow on the snowy land. Wolverine looks back through his rear window, then pulls over. Getting out, he checks the tow hitch, then scowls down at the trailer. Bluish light glints off a chain and dog tag around his neck. Slowly, he steps over to the trailer and pokes at a mound beneath a rumpled tarp. The mound moves. He yanks off the tarp, exposing the girl huddled on the floor of the trailer. She looks up from under her hood, her long brown hair in straggles.
What the hell are you doing?
I'm sorry. I needed a ride. Thought you might help me.
Get out.
He throws her bag on the ground.
Where am I supposed to go?
I don't know.
You don't know or you don't care.
Pick one.
As she hops onto the road, he strides back to the truck.
I saved your life.
No, you didn't.
Driving away, Wolverine frowns, then slows down the truck and throws it into park. Marie watches from the middle of the snow-packed road, then grabs her duffel bag and runs over. Later in the truck cab.
You don't have anything to eat, do you?
He reaches into the glove box, pulls out a package and tosses it in her lap, watching as she hungrily crams a chewy snack in her mouth. Marie draws back her hood and turns in her seat to face him.
I'm Rogue.
She glances down at his dog tag, which reads Wolverine.
Were you in the army? Doesn't that mean you were in the army?
He tucks it into his t-shirt. She looks away, then turns around and peeks into his messy camper.
Wow.
What?
Suddenly, my life doesn't look that bad.
Hey, if you prefer the road.
No. It looks great. It looks cozy.
She pops another snack in her mouth, then rubs her hands together. As he turns on the heat and nudges her, she jumps.
Put your hands on the heater. I'm not gonna hurt you, kid.
It's nothing personal. It's just that when people touch my skin, something happens.
What?
I don't know. They just get hurt.
Fair enough.
As he grips the wheel, she stares at his knuckles.
When they come out, does it hurt?
Every time. So what kind of a name is Rogue?
What kind of a name is Wolverine?
My name's Logan.
Marie.
Later at a bend in the road.
You know, you should wear your seatbelt.
Hey, look, kid, I don't need advice on auto.
A tree crashes across the hood of the truck. Logan flies through the windshield and tumbles onto the road, sliding 10 feet into a snowbank. Inside the cab, Marie sits hunched against the dash. Back in the camper, smoldering rags burst into flame. Trembling, Marie raises her head and looks out the shattered windshield. Logan lies face down in the snow, one arm thrown out to the side. As snow drifts down, Logan drags his arm forward, then pushes himself up. In the truck cab, Marie breathes heavily and watches, her brow tight with fear. Logan stands up groggily. A 3-inch gash bleeds on his forehead. He turns toward the truck and staggers over. In her seat, Marie grimaces and tries to move her legs. As fire builds in the camper, smoke seeps into the truck. Logan spits out some blood, then tilts his head from side to side, stretching. As Marie watches, the jagged gash on his forehead heals to smooth skin.
You all right? Kid, are you all right?
I'm stuck!
Logan stares down at the tree, torn from its base. He sniffs the air. His eyes scan the trees, then triple blades burst from each fist. A giant fur-clad man springs from the trees. He hurls Logan 20 feet into the air, where he cracks a birch tree in half, then drops into the snow. Panicked, Marie looks back into the burning camper. On his hands and knees, Logan peers up. The black-eyed giant, with fangs and long blonde hair, swings a log and sends Logan flying. As Logan lands unconscious on the truck hood, his finger blades retract. The fang giant paces toward the burning camper. Marie struggles in the truck cab. Behind her, flames reach a canister of propane. Now, whipped by gale force winds, the fang giant squints up at a stormy sky, then sees two figures standing in the road, obscured by driving snow. A brown-skinned woman with long white hair fixes her glowing white eyes on him. Next to her, a trim young man shoots a laser beam from a curved metal band across his eyes. The fang giant bounds into the woods as the beam shatters the fallen tree. Wide-eyed, Marie tugs at her jammed seatbelt. The young man opens the truck door, touches the earpiece of his eye band, and shoots a beam at the seatbelt anchor. The dark-skinned woman, her eyes now a gentle brown, holds out a hand to Marie as her partner yanks Logan off the hood. As they rush away, the truck explodes. Now, in a gray cavernous chamber with rock walls, a small man sprays mint green paint on a sculpted structure. Round goggles magnify his eyes. Sabretooth, the fang giant, walks past him.
Weren't you supposed to bring someone back with you?
Sabretooth, his wild blonde hair trailing down his back, strides into a tube-shaped passageway. His pace slows as he comes out in another cavernous room, where Eric stands at a sleek metal desk.
What happened?
They knew.
The gray-haired man, wearing a tailored burgundy shirt, holds out a hand and a metal chair moves. He sits down gracefully.
Charles.
Eric looks up from his deep musing and raises one hand. Logan's dog tag flies from Sabretooth's neck into Eric's hand. Eric reads it, comparing its number to one tattooed on his forearm.
Where is the mutant now?
With them.
He closes his fist around the tag and stands.
I have made the first move. That is all they know.
He drops the tag.
Come. The UN summit is approaching. Time for our little test.
As Eric strides off, the black-eyed Sabretooth snatches up Logan's dog tag. Now, in a metallic blue laboratory, Logan lies on a slab-like gurney, wearing only a pair of sweatpants. Dr. Jean Grey, the speaker from the Senate hearing, runs her hand along his arm, then feels between his knuckles. As she stares intently at a plastic vial on another table, it rises, then floats into her hand. Popping the lid, she takes out a needle and presses it into Logan's arm. Logan leaps up behind her and locks his hand around her throat. Her eyes roll back as Logan grits his teeth and glances around. Letting go, he runs off. Dr. Grey holds her neck. Barefoot, Logan runs down a metallic blue corridor. A round door embossed with a giant X closes at one end. Logan stops, then looks himself over and rips electrode pads from his bare torso. He pads down the corridor, scowling to the left and right, then stops by some display cases that hold black leather jumpsuits.
Where's he going?
Logan spins around. The long, empty corridor gleams under bands of white light. Turning back, he approaches the display cases, then finds a cabinet. Gray sweatsuits fill the shelves. Logan grabs a hooded jacket and pulls it on. Logan walks deliberately down the gleaming corridor, glancing from one round door to another.
Where are you going?
He darts into an alcove and backs against the wall. Next to him, a panel slides open, revealing a yellow room.
Over here.
His gaze darts left and right as he backs into the yellow room. The panel slides shut. Now another panel opens, and Logan looks into the main hallway of a stately building, its dark wood-paneled walls shining with polish. Standing Chinese vases, stuffed chairs, and side tables line the walls. Delicate chandeliers hang in a line down the middle of the arched ceiling. Panting, Logan enters the spacious hallway.
This way.
He's over there.
Logan ducks into a recessed window, then dashes to a double door. His hands reach for the knobs, then he hides behind a column. As Logan waits tensely behind the column, kids of various ages trot down a broad staircase behind him. They move down the hallway, and Logan sneaks back out. His chest heaving, he looks up the stairs. Running, Logan hurdles a sofa, then pushes open a door. Inside, Charles sits with students.
Good morning, Logan. So, I'd like your definitions of weak and strong anthropic principles on my desk on Wednesday, all right? That'll be all.
Smiling kindly, the bald-headed professor closes a book as his five students file past Logan. straggling behind, Katie reaches the closed door and passes through it.
Physics. I'm Charles Xavier. Would you like some breakfast?
Where am I?
Westchester, New York. You were attacked. My people brought you here for medical attention.
I don't need medical attention.
Yes, of course.
In his wheelchair, Charles nods.
Where's the girl?
Rogue? She's here. She's fine.
Really?
Logan's two rescuers come in.
Ah, Logan, I'd like you to meet Aurora Monroe, also called Storm. This is Scott Summers, also called Cyclops.
Scott holds out his hand. Logan ignores it.
They saved your life.
Dr. Gray enters.
I believe you've already met Dr. Jean Gray. You're in my school for the gifted, for mutants. You'll be safe here from Magneto.
What's a Magneto?
A very powerful mutant who believes that a war is brewing between mutants and the rest of humanity. I've been following his activities for some time. The man who attacked you is an associate of his called Sabretooth.
Sabretooth? Storm. What do they call you? Wheels? This is the stupidest thing I've ever heard.
He stares into Scott's red glasses.
Cyclops, right?
Logan grabs him.
You want to get out of my way?
Scott looks to Charles.
Logan, it's been almost 15 years, hasn't it? Living from day to day, moving from place to place, with no memory of who or what you are.
Shut up.
Give me a chance. I may be able to help you find some answers.
How do you know?
You're not the only one with gifts.
Where's he going?
He's over there.
What are you doing?
Over here.
Frantic, Logan turns his head, then stares at Charles, whose lips don't move.
What is this place?
Outside, kids play basketball.
Anonymity is a mutant's first defense against the world's hostility.
Hey, no power!
A kid runs across water.
To the public, we're merely a school for gifted youngsters. Cyclops, Storm, and Jean were some of my first students. I protected them, taught them to control their powers, and in time, teach others to do the same. The students are mostly runaways, frightened, alone, some with gifts so extreme that they've become a danger to themselves and those around them. Like your friend Rogue, incapable of physical human contact. Probably for the rest of her life. And yet here she is, with others her own age, learning, being accepted, not feared.
In Marie's classroom, a boy lights a lighter and a ball of flame floats above his hand. Another boy sends a crystal stream to the ball, turning it to ice. It drops and breaks.
John.
Sorry.
Storm turns back to the chalkboard. The second boy smiles at Marie.
I'm Bobby. What's your name? Rogue.
What'll happen to her?
Well, that's up to her. Rejoin the world as an educated young woman, or stay on to teach others, to become what the children have affectionately called X-Men.
Welcome to Mutant High.
But the school is merely our public face. The lower levels, however, are an entirely different matter.
Logan walks with Charles through the school and its laboratories.
When I was a boy, I discovered I had the power to control people's minds, make them think or do whatever I wanted. When I was 17, I met a young man named Eric Lenscher. He too had an unusual power. He could create magnetic fields and control metal. Believing that humanity would never accept us, he grew angry and vengeful. He became Magneto. There are mutants out there with incredible powers, Logan. And many who do not share my respect for mankind. If no one is equipped to oppose them, humanity's days could be over. I'll make a deal with you, Logan. Give me 48 hours to find out what Magneto wants with you. And I give you my word that I will use all my power to help you piece together what you've lost. And what you're looking for.
Now, on a city street, two policemen on motorcycles ride in front of a black car. Sidewalk crowds hold protest signs. One reads, "Send the mutants to the moon." The car pulls to a stop, and the smiling Senator Kelly steps out. Camera crews swarm as he makes his way to a government helicopter. Waving, he gets in. Later, he talks on a cell phone.
Senator, listen, you favor gun registration, yes? Well, some of these so-called children possess more than 10 times the destructive force of any handgun. No, I don't see a difference. All I see are weapons in our schools. Well, that's fair enough.
Across from him, a young man wears a suit.
It's going to be close. Boat this loaded is always close.
What about the UN summit? The whole world will be watching. Maybe there's some way you could use that to your advantage.
We're Americans, Henry. Let the rest of the damn world deal with mutants in their own way. You know the situation? These mutants? People like this Jean Grey. If it were up to me, I'd lock them all away. It's a war. It's the reason people like me exist.
As the well-dressed young aide watches him, Kelly looks out the window and sees the ocean.
Where the hell are we?
The young man's face transforms to bright blue. The senator gapes as the aide's suit, tie, and body melt away to form a sleek blue female covered with scales.
Pilot!
She kicks him back and locks her feet around his head.
You know, people like you are the reason I was afraid to go to school as a child.
The red-headed woman smacks him repeatedly with one foot, snapping his head to and fro. He collapses in his seat. Her yellow reptilian eyes blaze in contrast to her blue skin. Sneering at the senator, she moves to the cockpit and puts on headphones. The pilot smiles and nods as the helicopter crosses the water toward a lone rocky island that rises like a fortress. Back at the Academy lab, Logan lies on a gurney, watching intently as Jean Grey peels electrodes from his hairy chest.
I'm sorry.
For what?
If I hurt you.
Her auburn hair, drawn back, falls in wisps around her smooth, angular face as she studies him. Smiling, she steps over to a large screen.
So, couldn't wait to get my shirt off again, huh?
She pushes a button, and Logan's gurney shoots into a coffin-like tube lined with panels of light. The tube darkens, then lights up one panel at a time. Later, Jean shows Charles, Storm, and Scott a scan of Logan's bones, interlocked with a metal skeleton.
Metal is an alloy called adamantium, supposedly indestructible. It's been surgically grafted to his entire skeleton.
How could he have survived a procedure like that?
His mutation. He has uncharted regenerative capability, which enables him to heal rapidly. This also makes his age impossible to determine. He could very well be older than you, Professor.
Who did this to him?
He doesn't know. Nor does he remember anything about his life before it happened.
Experimentation on mutants. It's not unheard of. But I've never seen anything like this before.
What do you think Magneto wants with him?
Not entirely sure it's him Magneto wants.
Now, inside Eric's cavernous fortress, the scaly blue woman watches the panicked Senator Kelly exhale clouds of breath. Sabretooth stands nearby. The small man, now with mint green hair, squats on a rock. Fretful, the senator looks up at a mourning dove. Suddenly, a long, fat tongue snatches the bird, then springs back into the small man's mouth. He swallows.
Toad has a wicked tongue, Senator. Just like you.
Eric steps lightly down some steps, wearing a ribbed military sweater. The scaly woman joins him.
Who are you people? Where's Henry?
Mr. Gyrish has been dead for some time, Senator. But I've had Mystique here keep you company. She takes so many shapes.
Whatever you do to me, you'll make me right. Every word I've spoken will be confirmed.
Mystique unwraps herself from Eric's arm and pads away.
Are you a God-fearing man, Senator? That's such a strange phrase. I've always thought of God as a teacher, as a bringer of light, wisdom, and understanding. You see, I think what you really are afraid of is me. Me and my kind. The Brotherhood of Mutants.
Eric saunters down a metal walkway that bridges a dark
pool. Oh, it's not so surprising.
The senator follows, strapped to a moving chair that stops as Eric raises one hand.
Well, don't fear God, Senator. And certainly don't fear me.
Not anymore.
Eric steps onto a platform.
What do you intend to do to me?
Let's just say God works too slowly.
Eric holds his hands above two gleaming metal posts that stand waist high. Smiling, he rises up through a round open tower. At the top, a horseshoe shape curves up to either side of Eric, its open end just above his head. As he grips the two shining posts like walking sticks, a third curved prong rises behind him, arching over his head. It comes to rest, pointing down at Senator Kelly. The giant horseshoe rotates around Eric. He grips the posts as the prongs blur with speed. The force of motion vibrates the skin on his weathered face. His eyes droop as the whirling prongs produce a bursting constellation of light that spreads out over the tower like a net thrown in slow motion. As Eric's face twists in pain, the light becomes a globe, encircling him and throbbing with intensity. Bursting out of its globe shape, the brilliant light breaks over the walkway, covering the wailing senator, then spreads to Mystique and Sabretooth, who stand stoically at the other end. Quickly, the light shrinks to a point above Eric's head and goes out. In the dimness of the cavern, the senator sits panting. Back at the academy with Jean Grey.
I think you'll be comfortable here.
Where's your room?
With Scott down the hall.
Logan opens a closet.
Was that your gift, putting up with that guy?
Actually, I'm telekinetic. I can move things with my mind.
Really? What kinds of things?
The closet slams shut.
All kinds of things.
She smiles softly.
I also have some telepathic ability.
Well, like your professor?
Nowhere near that powerful. But he's teaching me to develop it.
I'm sure he is.
Logan stands close to her.
So read my mind.
I'd rather not.
Come on. You afraid you might like it?
I doubt it.
Logan glances away, then meets her eyes in a steady gaze. Slowly, Jean raises her hands to either side of Logan's head and closes her eyes. Images show a man in uniform and scientists bending over a long, narrow water chamber. Now a clean-shaven Logan floats in green fluid, blueprint lines drawn on his frightened face. Jean's eyes fly open.
What do you see?
Scott.
Scott stands in the doorway, wearing sleek red sunglasses.
Good night, Logan.
Smiling, she walks off in a red skirt and jacket, brushing past Scott, who stands in the doorway. Logan turns and faces him.
You gonna tell me to stay away from your girl?
Well, if I had to do that, she wouldn't be my girl.
Well, then I guess you've got nothing to worry about, do you? Cyclops.
They must just burn you up that a boy like me saved your life, huh? You gotta be careful. I might not be there next time. Oh, and Logan, stay away from my girl.
With a smirk, Scott closes Logan's bedroom door. Later, in a room with several beds and children's toys, Marie lies on her side, listening. In another room, Logan lies on his back, stirring in bed. Wearing a long white nightgown, Marie steps across Logan's room, then leans over him. Her hand hovers inches from his shoulder. Logan frowns as if in pain.
Logan.
In his dream, sparks fly around a man wearing a face shield and goggles. Now, Logan's naked body surfaces in the tank.
Logan, wake up.
He sees a red-hot fire. Inside the glass tank, straps hold down his legs. Now, men drink champagne. Underwater, skeletal blueprint lines cover Logan's feet and hands. A masked man reaches into the water. Back in his bedroom, Logan springs up in bed. Her brown eyes frozen in a stare, Marie begins to choke. Logan looks on in horror, his face drenched in sweat. Three knife blades poke out of Marie's back. Logan retracts the blades and looks around.
Help me! Somebody help!
Marie jerks and closes her eyes, then slowly raises her hand to Logan's cheek, which breaks into a fiery glow as veiny ridges spread across his face like cracks in the ground. As Marie weaves back and forth, ridges spread across her face. Logan's face smooths out again. Then he starts to gag as three bloody punctures on Marie's back dissolve to pale, flawless skin. kids gather at the bedroom doorway. Pushing through them, Scott, Jean, and Storm run into the room. Marie lets go of Logan, and he drops to the ground.
Scott, grab a pillow.
Holding her hands in the air, Marie faces Storm.
It was an accident.
She walks through the group of kids and leaves. Tommy stares after her, exchanging looks with a classmate. Later, Charles sits next to Logan's bed.
Logan?
What happened? Is she all right?
She'll be all right.
What did she do to me?
Whenever Rogue touches someone, she takes their energy, their life force. In the case of mutants, she absorbs their gifts for a short while. In your case, your ability to heal.
I feel like she almost killed me.
If she'd held out any longer, she could have.
Now, high on a towering stone wall, prison bars fill a round portal. Wearing a suit and tie, Senator Kelly grips the silver bars and looks out. He turns back from the sound and drops his head forward, pressing his face to the bars. His eyes shifting, he pushes in. His face warps and his eyes protrude as his skin stretches like a water balloon, wedging through the tight space. When he pulls away, his face snaps back to normal. He turns back again, then shoves his head between the bars. As his face narrows, his eyes bulge out like golf balls and his lips stretch. Straining, he pushes his ears past the bars. His head pops through. Now, as Eric walks through the air, metal plates fly in front of him, forming a catwalk to a high door with bars that bend open as he waves his hand.
How are we feeling, Senator? Advanced, I hope.
Followed by Sabretooth, Eric enters a dark cell and looks around. Spying discarded dress shoes, he looks over at the portal and waves his arm, tearing out the gleaming prison bars. Eric leans over the stony sill and finds Senator Kelly gripping the outer wall.
What the hell have you done to me?
Senator, this is pointless. Where would you go? Who would take you in now that you're one of us?
Eric breaks into a broad smile and turns away. Sabretooth leans out and grips the senator by the wrist. Far below, Whitecaps break against the towering cliff wall. Senator Kelly's hand stretches and beads up with water. He slips through Sabretooth's grip and plummets into the dark water. The wind tosses Sabretooth's long hair, and he stares down at the breaking waves. As he turns back into the room, Eric eyes him eagerly, then frowns as he pulls in a scrap of the senator's suit jacket. Eric sneers and strides away. His back to the cell, he raises one hand and the bars bend back, sealing in Sabretooth. Later, the sun shines on a quiet bay. 10 feet from a boy's raft, a hairless man pops up, then sinks. Later on the beach, another boy pokes a stick at a jellyfish.
Tommy, let it go! Tommy, please let it go! I'm telling Mommy!
Gaping, the boy looks up as a hairless figure with jiggling waterlogged skin and gills on its back walks onto the beach. A vein-like pattern disappears from its firming skin as it morphs into Senator Kelly. A crowd gawks as the naked senator stops by a soda cart where a television plays.
Number one agenda of this week's UN summit. With the leaders of over 200 nations attending, the Secret Service has transformed Ellis Island into a veritable Fort Knox for tomorrow night's opening gala.
The dripping senator takes the vendor's coat. Now, Marie sits on a bench.
Rogue.
Bobby.
Rogue, what did you do? They say that you're stealing other mutants' powers.
No, I borrowed his power.
You never use your power against another mutant.
I had no choice. No, you
if
have
I
to understand
you,
me.
If I were you, I'd get myself out of here.
Her soft brown eyes narrow.
What do you mean?
Listen, the students are freaked. Professor Xavier is furious. I don't know what he'll do with you. I think it'll be easier on your own.
Swallowing, she looks down at the ground and closes her eyes. Bobby stares at her.
You should go.
She looks up at him, her brow furrowed, then sets her jaw and gets up from the bench. Marie looks back at Bobby, then turns away, her brown hair flying. Holding her head down, she crosses the grassy quad. Bobby gives a coy smile, and his eyes glow yellow. Now an X-ray shows a human skull.
What are you looking for, Eric?
It's strange. There are more powerful mutants out there. Why should this one be so important to him?
Maybe it's his way with people.
You don't like him.
How could you tell?
Well, I am psychic, you know.
Logan enters with Storm.
Where is she?
Who?
Rogue. She's gone.
Later, a blue laser scans Charles' unblinking eye.
Welcome, Professor.
A lock circles a blue lens and the door opens.
Welcome to Cerebro.
Inside a massive sphere, Charles rolls across a catwalk to its center.
This certainly is a big, round room.
The brainwaves of mutants are different from average human beings. This device amplifies my power, allowing me to locate mutants across great distances. That's how I intend to find Rogue.
Why don't you just use it to find Magneto?
I've been trying, but he seems to have found some way to shield himself from it.
How would he know how to do that?
Because he helped me build it. Now, if you'll excuse me.
High in the air, at the end of the catwalk, Charles puts on an elaborate metal helmet connected by cables to a gleaming console. Logan walks back out to Scott, Jean, and Storm, and the round door closes.
Have you ever
used Cerebro? No. It takes a degree of control, and for someone like me, it's
dangerous.
Inside, Charles sits motionless at the console, his eyes closed beneath the shining helmet. The steel blue sphere, its walls shingled with hundreds of panels, expands outward. The panels begin to glow. Light explodes like a star, then streams of black flecks shoot by at high speed. The streams turn downward and the flecks land in a fog as a crowd of people, seen in black and white. We dart from one to another, erratically sampling the crowd. One man checks his watch, another talks on a cell phone. A middle-aged woman grips her bag. Now, Marie stands by herself with her hood up. The crowd's clear and a train station in color surrounds her. Charles opens his eyes.
She's at the train station.
Where is it?
A few miles west of here. Logan, you can't leave the mansion. It's just the opportunity Magneto needs.
Listen, I'm the reason she took off.
We had a deal.
She's all right. She's just upset.
Storm, Cyclops, find her. See if you can talk to her.
Later, Storm and Scott stride into a clean, spacious garage filled with gleaming sports cars. Scott looks around.
What?
Where's my motorcycle?
Now Logan races through the night on a motorcycle, his black hair whipping back. Squinting down at the handle, he eyes a chrome toggle switch, then pushes it with his thumb. The cycle rockets forward. Trees pass in a wild blur. Logan's face, stretched taut against the force, breaks into a mad grin. Now in a train car, Marie sits alone by a window, her smooth face framed by a dark hood. She peeks across the aisle as a mother gently strokes her young son's cheek. Marie turns away with a faint grimace. Logan approaches.
Hey, kid.
She turns to Logan with a piercing doe-eyed look. As he sits in the seat next to her, she stares into his eyes, then swallows and looks away.
I'm sorry about last night.
Me too.
You running again?
I heard the professor was mad at me.
And who told you that?
A boy at school.
When's the last time you saw her? She was supposed to meet me for lunch.
At the academy, Bobby and his friends walk by. Then a second Bobby steps into the hallway.
You look around. I'll check with the ticket agent.
At the crowded train station, Storm and Scott split up. Meanwhile, Bobby kneels in front of the round door to Cerebro. His eye flashes yellow, then changes shape and color as the blue laser scans it.
Welcome, Professor.
As the door to Cerebro slides open, Bobby's eyes glow yellow. His clothed boyish form morphs into the slinky body of Mystique. Blue skin envelops his face. Mystique crosses to the metal console, Pulling out a hose, she inserts a cylinder, then reconnects it. Brown fluid invades a clear tank. Now in the train car.
You think I should go back?
I think you should follow your instincts.
The first boy I ever kissed ended up in a coma for 3 weeks. I can still feel him inside my head. And it's the same with you.
As they gaze at one another, her eyes fill with tears. Logan turns and stares at the floor, frowning thoughtfully. Marie closes her eyes and teardrops spill down her smooth cheeks. Choking back her grief, she swallows hard and looks up. Logan reaches out and touches the back of her hood, then draws the young woman close to him. Resting her head against his chest, Marie lets a heavy sigh escape.
There's not many people that'll understand what you're going through. But I think this guy Xavier is one of them. He seems to genuinely want to help you, and that's a rare thing. For people like us.
Marie raises her head and looks at him. As the train jerks forward, she sits up. The train slowly pulls away.
Okay, so what do you say? Give these geeks one more shot. Come on, I'll take care of you.
You promise?
Yeah, I promise.
A hint of a smile passes over her face. Inside the train station, a little blonde boy grins up at Scott, who grins back. Eyeing his eye band, the boy's mother leads him away.
Come along, I told you.
Now at the ticket window.
She's about 17. My height. Has brown hair.
Behind Storm, Sabretooth throws a man aside. As she turns, he grabs her by the throat and raises her off the ground.
Scream for me.
He slams her back, cracking the window. Scott turns. Behind him, the dark figure of Toad scoots straight up the wall. His tongue whips down and knocks off Scott's eye band. Sparking red current shoots from his naked eyes, exploding through the ceiling. Twisting in Sabretooth's grasp, Storm stares through the blown-out ceiling at the sky. Small flashes of lightning spark from her white glowing eyes. Violent bolts of lightning fill the sky. One bolt scissors into the station, lifts Sabretooth, and flies him backwards over the crowd. He crashes through a wall and drops to the floor. Toad leapfrogs downward, then springs through the hole to Sabretooth.
Quit playing around.
Now Marie's train jerks to a halt. The lights in the car flash chaotically, then fizzle, leaving the passengers in darkness. Logan paces in the aisle. Suddenly, a steel briefcase flips upright in a luggage rack. A metal vent warps inward. Logan braces himself as the train rocks. One end of the coach splits apart. Sparks rain down and passengers dive out of the way. Logan squints into a white-hot glare as a dark figure glides toward him. As it touches down, Logan reaches for Marie. Blades flash from Logan's knuckles as Eric steps toward him, dressed as Magneto in a cape and black rubber helmet.
You must be Wolverine.
He freezes Logan.
That remarkable metal doesn't run through your entire body, does it?
Eric opens his black-gloved fist, and Logan's arms spring out to either side. As Eric spreads his own fingers, Logan's blades fan out wider and wider, and he rises into the air.
You, my dear boy, whoever said I wanted you?
Logan's eyes strain toward Marie, whose teary gaze is locked on Eric. As Eric points his finger, Logan flies backward, then crashes into the rear door and crumbles to the ground. As Marie runs after him, Eric stares at a syringe strapped to his hip, which launches it like a tiny missile. It strikes Marie in the neck, and she drops.
Young people.
Later, he strides through the desolate ruins of the train station with Sabretooth and Toad, who carries a body bag. Outside, police cars cover the lawn.
All right, hold it.
Hold it right there. Stay where you are. Put your hands over your heads. Now.
With a bemused look, Eric raises his hands, lifting two police cruisers into the air. The policemen crane their heads back and shift in place. Eric moves his hands like a puppeteer, and the cars slam down on two other cars. The policemen dive for safety, then form a line and push forward, cocking their pistols and rifles. Eric tilts his head, and the guns fly from their hands. The weapons turn in midair and float back until each man stares down the barrel of his own floating gun.
You Homo sapiens and your guns.
Sabretooth grips Eric by the throat.
That's enough, Eric.
Let them go.
Slowly, Eric turns from Toad's glare to the crowd.
Why not come out where I can see you, Charles?
Charles sits in a car with Jean Grey.
What do you want her for? Can't you read my mind?
He taps his helmet.
What now? Save the girl? You'll have to kill me, Charles. And what will that accomplish? Let them pass that law and they'll have you in chains with a number burned into your forehead.
It won't be that way.
Then kill me and find out. Huh? Then release me.
Eric glares at Sabretooth. As Charles turns his head in the car, Toad turns away with the body bag.
Fine.
A floating gun cocks as Eric focuses his glare. In the car, Charles stares straight ahead. The gun fires. The bullet hangs in the air, pressing into a policeman's forehead.
Care to press your luck, Charles?
All the hovering guns cock, and Charles looks to Jean.
I don't think I can stop them all.
The bullet rotates, slowly boring between the policeman's eyebrows. Eric's eye twitches. As Charles looks down, Sabretooth drops his gaze and relaxes his grip on Eric's neck. Toad blinks out of his trance.
Still unwilling to make sacrifices. That's what makes you weak.
Charles opens his eyes. Above the train station, the senator's government helicopter hovers. Mystique sits at the controls, her yellow eyes fixed on Eric, Sabretooth, and Toad as she lands.
Goodbye, Charles.
The threesome boards the helicopter. Toad goes first with the body bag. As the chopper rises into the black sky, unarmed men lean against the wind from its blades. The rotating bullet drops, leaving a burn mark between the policeman's eyebrows. All around him, guns fall to the ground. He reaches a shaking hand to his face. Later, in his bedroom at the academy, Logan throws water on his face, then turns impatiently to Charles and Storm.
He said he wanted me.
I made a terrible mistake. His helmet was somehow designed to block my telepathy. Couldn't see what he was after till it was too late.
Where are you going?
I'm gonna find her.
How?
The traditional way. Look.
Storm follows him downstairs.
Logan, you can't do this alone.
Who's gonna help me? You? So far, you've all done a bang-up job.
Then help us. Fight with us.
Fight with you? Or join the team? Be an X-Man? Who the hell do you think you are? You're a mutant. The whole world out there is full of people that hate and fear you, and you're wasting your time trying to protect them? I got better things to do. You know, Magneto's right. There's a war coming. You sure you're on the right side?
At least I've chosen a side.
Logan opens a door to Senator Kelly, who stands panting in a sweatshirt, his hair messy and wet.
I'm looking for Dr. Jean Grey.
He falls into Logan's arms. Later, Jean and Charles join Logan in a lab room where the senator lies on a gurney.
Senator Kelly. I'm Professor Charles Xavier.
I was afraid if I went to hospital, they would
treat you like a mutant. We're not what you think. Not all of us.
Tell it to the ones who did this to me.
Charles frowns and wheels over to the head of the gurney.
Senator?
Charles gazes down on Kelly's face.
I want you to try and relax.
He places his fingers on the senator's temples.
I'm not going to hurt you.
As Charles closes his eyes, images flash. The senator pops up in the quiet, sun-filled bay, his elastic features wedged through prison bars. He trembles under a brilliant white light strapped to a chair. Now, transported to Eric's cavernous chamber, Charles looks up, then slips out of the senator's chair straps and stands. Slowly, Charles walks down the bridge, his eyes trained upward. Turning around, he finds Senator Kelly strapped in the chair, gazing at the gleaming elevated platform. Charles turns back as Eric descends, exhausted and gripping the two metal posts. Wearily, Eric looks up as Mystique peels his burned hands from their grip. A painful grimace contorts his face. Back in the lab, Charles stares straight ahead. In his mind, he sees Mystique as she leads Eric over to the senator.
Welcome to the future, brother.
Later, as Logan paces, Charles sits in a wood-paneled study with Jean and Scott.
The machine emits radiation that triggers mutation in ordinary human beings.
But the mutation is unnatural. Kelly's body is rejecting it. His cells began to break down almost immediately.
What effect does the radiation have on mutants?
There appears to be none. But I fear that it will seriously harm any normal person exposed to it.
So what does Magneto want with Rogue?
I don't know.
Scott studies Charles' worried face.
Wait a second. You said this machine draws its power from Magneto, and that it weakened him.
Yes. In fact, it nearly killed him.
He's going to transfer his power to Rogue and use her to power the machine.
In the lab, tiny veins cover the senator's clammy face.
Is somebody there?
Storm approaches.
Yes. I'm here.
Please don't leave me.
He grabs her wrist.
Don't want to be alone.
All right.
Senator Kelly meets Storm's sympathetic gaze with cloudy blue eyes and smiles weakly. Beneath his body, water runs across the gurney.
Do you hate normal people?
Sometimes.
Why?
I suppose I'm afraid of them.
Well, I think you've got one less person to be afraid of.
Horrified, Storm watches his chin kick back in a spasm as his glistening skin turns grayish-blue and expands. As she holds his hand, it bursts into water. His shape melts into a fluid, blubbery mass that bursts into a torrent of water and pours onto the floor. Storm runs out. Now in the study.
Cyclops, you and Storm ready the jet. I'm going to find Rogue. Jean, get Logan a uniform.
Oh, wait a minute. He's not coming with us, is he?
Yes.
I'm sorry, Professor, but he'll endanger the mission. And
yeah, I was the one to give the train station a new sunroof, pal.
No, you were the one who stabbed Rogue through the chest.
Scott.
Hey, why don't you take your little mission and stick it up here?
Senator Kelly is dead.
Charles shifts anxiously.
I'm going to find her. Settle this.
Later at the Cerebro console, Charles puts on the helmet. A spotlight shines down on him. Cables connect the helmet to the steely console. With a deep exhale, Charles closes his eyes. Light fans out from the helmet as Mystique's brown fluid stirs in the tank. Charles claws the helmet off, then slumps forward. As he turns his wheelchair, he winces, then falls onto the catwalk. Later, Charles lies unconscious, a dozen electrodes affixed to his bald head. Jean and Storm stand on either side of his gurney.
I'm sorry.
Logan turns away from Scott and leaves the lab. Later, Jean works in dim light on the Cerebro machine, reversing the flow of the brown fluid. As the tank clears, a soft glow fills the spherical theater, and she smiles. One by one, circular lights along the catwalk turn on. In the lab, Scott leans over Charles.
You can still hear me, can't you?
Inside Cerebro, Jean steps away from the podium, then looks back. Charles stares motionless from the gurney.
You've taught me everything in my life that is ever worth knowing. that if anything happens, I'll take care of them.
At the end of the catwalk, suspended in space, Jean kneels at the console and puts on the shining helmet. At the opposite end of the hall, Scott leaves the lab, then stops. Beyond the round open door at the end, he sees Jean kneeling with her back to him.
Jean?
Scott steps forward warily, then breaks into a run.
Jean? No!
Slowly, the gleaming round door closes around its blue lens, sealing out Scott. Inside, Jean winces with pain and crumbles onto the catwalk. The door opens and Scott runs to her.
Jean. Jean. Answer me. Please.
I know where Magneto's going.
Now, a motorboat swinging spotlight slices through blue fog. On shore, a security guard waves. The boat's pilot waves back. The guard's eyes widen as Sabretooth spears him from behind with his claws, then tosses him aside and walks back up to a seawall lined with lights. In the boat, behind the pilot, lies his double on the floor. Mystique stands at the helm and tucks an earpiece into place. Now, on a crowded lawn at Ellis Island, cameras flash as formally dressed men and women walk down a red carpet, flanked by United States Marines. Across the bay from the well-lit scene, a helicopter circles the Statue of Liberty. At its base, two guards pass one another and nod. The green-haired toad drops onto one guard. Grinning with satisfaction, he leapfrogs away. Now, as the motorboat docks, a tarp blows, exposing a mint-green module the size of a bus. The slinky Mystique steps into the cabin, where Marie sits, shackled to a handrail. Eric walks in and gazes up at the towering Statue of Liberty.
Magnificent, isn't she?
I've seen it.
I first saw her in 1949. America was going to be the land of tolerance, of peace.
As he studies the statue, Marie stares at the dead boat pilot.
Are you going to kill me?
The gray-haired man turns, looks down on Marie, and smiles.
Yes.
Why?
Because there is no land of tolerance. There is no peace, not here, nor anywhere else. Women and children, whole families destroyed simply because they were born different from those in power. Well, after tonight, the world's powerful will be just like us. They will return home as brothers. As mutants. Our cause will be theirs. Your sacrifice will mean our survival.
Startled, she looks up as Sabretooth barges in.
I'll understand if that comes as small consolation.
Slowly, Eric rises and turns to Sabretooth.
Put it in the machine. I'll raise it.
Back at the Academy.
Magneto is here. Liberty Island. Now, presumably, his objective is to mutate the world leaders at the UN summit on Ellis Island.
He doesn't know his machine kills. And judging from what the professor saw, if Magneto gave Rogue enough power, he could wipe out everyone in New York City.
All right. We can insert here at the George Washington Bridge. Come around the bank, just off of Manhattan. We land on the far side of Liberty Island. Here.
What about Harbor Patrol? Radar?
If they have anything that can pick up our jet, they deserve to catch us.
Later, Scott flips switches in a cockpit. Logan sits behind, next to Jean, tugging at the tight collar of his leather jumpsuit. Storm co-pilots. Scowling, Logan jerks his arms, stretching his sleeves.
Do you actually go outside in these things? What would you prefer? Yellow spandex?
Jean smiles at Logan, and Scott pushes the throttle forward. They rock in their seats as the engines engage.
Whoa.
Now, in a paved courtyard that fronts the Academy, a basketball shudders, then rolls as the ground slides open. The gray bat-winged jet rises to a hover, then turns and soars into the night sky. Standing awestruck at their bedroom windows, young boys watch the jet's ignited blue engines recede. In the cockpit, Logan looks curiously at his fist as three blades shoot out through his black glove. The jet banks to the right, slicing through the darkness. It flies high over the Hudson Bay toward the glittering George Washington Bridge.
Okay, there's the bridge. I'm taking her down.
Cloaked in a foggy night, the jet dives low and flies just above the bay, churning up white water.
Storm, some cover, please.
Her eyes turn the color of milk as she focuses. Ahead of the jet, a dense cloud forms over the water and they fly over it. Scott hits an overhead switch. A red filter drops over the windshield, bringing the Statue of Liberty clearly into view. Now, Eric peers from a window.
Toad, Mystique, stay sharp. We're not alone. And you stay here. Once I give my power to the girl, I'll be temporarily weakened. You'll be my only defense.
He turns to Sabretooth, whose black eyes glisten. Out on the bay, two cops stand watch in a motorboat.
Sounds like a storm's coming.
Behind them, the jet passes by. Scott checks a computer display, charting the plane's elevation and angle. Tipping up its nose, he brings the plane to a hover, then cuts the engine. The jet drops roughly onto the water. Logan sneers.
Sorry? You call that a landing?
Later, Scott, Logan, Storm, and Jean walk to the Statue of Liberty, its rich green patina illuminated by spotlights. They crane their necks to see the torch held aloft by one long arm.
The torch.
High above, the mint green module protrudes from the base of the torch. Inside the torch, Marie sits shackled to Eric's two metal posts. Now the team enters a museum at the statue's base, passing security monitors.
Greeted with a sort of garden party atmosphere, which was designed to entertain them as the others traversed the rigid security.
As an alarm goes off around Logan, he slashes the control box with his knuckle blades. Scott turns with a condescending smile. Logan retracts two blades, leaving the middle one raised at Scott, who breaks into a grin. They walk on, passing a human-sized Statue of Liberty, its eyes open, revealing a yellow glow. Logan sniffs the air.
There's someone here.
Where?
I don't know. Keep your eye open.
Logan?
Logan walks around a corner without them. As the team checks out the dimly lit museum, Logan comes back around some columns.
Anything?
I know there's someone here. I just can't see him.
As Scott turns his back, Logan's blades shoot out. From behind him, another Logan attacks. One Logan blows the other a kiss. Both men extend their finger blades. Scott steps forward, touching his earpiece, and they look up with alarm.
Wait!
One Logan cuts a rope, and a cargo door slides shut, sealing them off. As they slash at each other, Scott eyes the door.
All right, back up, back up.
As one Logan pulls his knuckle blades out of the wall, the other runs off. Outside, Scott touches his earpiece. Toad's tongue wraps around a beam above them, and the mutant swings in and kicks backwards, slamming Scott into a display case. Toad sidekicks Gene, then lands in a squat and shoots his tongue around another cargo door handle, sealing Scott off. Turning, he lassos Storm's wrist with his tongue and hurls her into a balcony gift shop. Jean stands up, her long red hair shining in the lights. With a demonic grin, the green-haired toad breaks into a jig, then springs toward Jean. Jean holds up one hand and freezes him in midair. Toad spits green slime on her face. She drops her hand and he falls to the ground. As Jean struggles with the slime mask, Toad leapfrogs from one column to another. Storm strides along the balcony as he angles up. At the rail, he squats and grins at her, then flips in the air, kicking her in the head on his way down. Storm's white hair whipsaws around her face as she crashes backwards over a table. A second kick sends her into an elevator. As the doors close, Toad dances with a metal bar like a cane. Downstairs, Scott blasts open the cargo door with a laser.
Jean!
Slime covers her mouth and nose.
Oh, God.
Now, one Logan kicks the other in the chest, then flips forward and comes down with a scowl. The other Logan leaps up, twirls in the air, and turns into Mystique. On her way down, she karate kicks Logan in the chin. Licking her blue lips, she flies straight up and rotates, then lands face to face with him. Mystique grabs his wrists and kicks his face, then vaults over his shoulder, wrenching his arms behind his back. Spinning him around, she kicks him in the groin. Logan crumbles to the ground, then growls. Mystique whips a chain at him. Logan catches it in his knuckle blades and flips her over. As Logan swings his blades at her, she holds up a chain-link door. His blades slice through. She kicks him away. Mystique does a running backflip off Logan, lands on some crates, and strikes a pose. She boots him in the face, then climbs a water pipe upside down using only her hands. Back in the museum, Scott steps away from Jean.
Don't move.
Logan turns a dial on his earpiece and shoots a narrow beam of red light, shattering the hardened slime. On the balcony, Toad turns as the rattling elevator doors open to bolts of lightning. Holding out her black leather cape, Storm rises into view.
Don't you people ever die!
Her white hair blowing, Storm floats out of the elevator shaft with white glowing eyes, then lands and walks toward Toad. Gale force winds whip furniture and merchandise at him. Clawing at the ground, he sneers up at her. As Storm holds out her arms to either side, Toad blows backward through a glass door and falls into the dark sky. Flailing his arms and legs, he shoots out his tongue and lashes it around a railing. Storm walks through the door and watches him fight against the wind, his tongue stretched to its limit.
Do you know what happens to a toad when it's struck by lightning?
She trains her white glowing eyes on the sky, sparking with electricity, high above the statue's torch.
The same thing that happens to everything else.
A lightning bolt snakes out of the sky and strikes the railing. The white-hot electrical current shoots up Toad's tongue and launches him into the night. He lands with a splash in the Hudson Bay. Storm turns and goes into the museum.
Logan, is that you?
Shh.
His back to her, Logan stands with his arms held out in readiness. Storm glances around, then walks carefully toward him. Her steps slow as he sniffs the air.
The other one ain't far away.
Come on. We have to regroup.
I know, but there's a problem.
Logan slashes her in the gut.
You're not part of the group.
Gritting his teeth, he pulls out his blades. Storm's eyes turn yellow, and her black-gloved hand dissolves to a scaly blue. As she falls to the ground, her white hair shrinks and turns red, and her face warps into Mystique's. Now, in the main room with Jean, Scott grabs his earpiece as Logan opens a cargo door.
Hey, it's me.
Prove it.
You're a dick.
Okay.
Storm looks down from the balcony.
Hey.
Later, Scott, Jean, Logan, and Storm hurry up a winding staircase inside the massive copper statue, then collect on a landing and look through an opening. Up above them, the statue's long arm leads to the torch. Logan steps forward and stares, his face frozen in a wary expression.
Everybody get out of here.
What is it?
I can't move.
Straining, he tries to face them, then flies backwards and sticks onto the wall, a few feet off the ground. The others jerk and shoot backwards. Scott's eye band misfires. Metal support bands curl from the walls and snap around their bodies. One locks Scott's head face to face with Jean. Eric floats down onto the landing.
Ah, my brothers. Welcome. And you. Let's point those claws of yours in a safer direction.
Eric raises his hand toward Logan, whose arms slowly cross. Metal bands strap his clenched fists over his chest. Now, Sabretooth drops onto the landing behind Eric.
You better close your eyes.
Scott closes his eyes as Sabretooth takes his eye band.
Storm, fry him.
Oh, yes. A bolt of lightning into a huge copper conductor. I thought you lived at a school.
Now, on the crowded lawn at Ellis Island, a man steps to a microphone.
For those of you who may not be familiar with the historical significance...
Inside the statue, Eric speaks into a headset.
Mystique. Mystique.
I've seen Senator Kelly.
So the good senator survived his fall. And the swim to shore. He's become even more powerful than I could have imagined.
He's dead.
It's true. I saw him die. Like those people down there will die.
Are you sure you saw what you saw?
I would also like to thank the President of the United States of America for hosting this event under the lights of the great city of New York.
The formally dressed crowd applauds as fireworks explode. Eric turns with a frown.
Why do none of you understand what I'm trying to do? Those people down there, they control our fate and the fate of every other mutant. Soon our fate will be theirs.
Help! Please help me!
You're so full of shit. If you were really so righteous, it'd be you and that thing.
Logan looks up at the torch. As Marie rocks in her shackles, Eric rises through the air, his palms facing upward. Fireworks break above him as he lands on a balcony surrounding the torch's sculpted flame.
Please! Somebody please help me!
His face gleaming with sweat, Logan begins to pant. Sabretooth watches him. Logan's eyes dart to the metal bands that pin his crossed arms against his chest. Closing his eyes, Logan takes a deep breath and shoots out his knuckle blades. The blades slice into Logan's arms, then slash the metal bands. He drops to the floor. Inside the torch's flame, Marie cowers on the floor as a door opens. Eric enters the tiny room. Looming over her, he holds out a hand and she rises, each wrist shackled to a metal post. Now, Sabretooth steps over to Logan. His black eyes study the body. Then he reaches down and grips him by the collar. Logan's eyes open and he unleashes his blades, goring Sabretooth in the gut as he pulls him up. Sabretooth hurls Logan out of the opening. Logan tumbles onto the statue's crown and holds onto one of the triangular spikes. As Sabretooth grabs his feet and yanks him back, Logan boots him in the jaw. Logan extends his knuckle blades, grits his teeth, and charges. Behind them, the New York City skyline lights up the night. Inside the torch, Eric holds his hand near Marie's face.
I'm sorry, lady.
Don't do this.
Eric cradles Marie's head in his hands. Vein-like ridges appear on her horror-struck face. Down below, Logan yanks his dog tag from Sabretooth's neck.
This is mine.
Sabretooth spins him around, gripping his neck with long claws and lifting him in the air. Inside the torch, Eric's face reddens and breaks into a web of lines as Sabretooth holds Logan over his head and hurls him into space. Logan claws at a crown spike, then twirls around it and lands as the sheared point drops off. Blades extended, he leaps at Sabretooth and pierces him in the chest. Above them, Eric throws back his head. Logan looks up at the torch and Sabretooth throws him over the side. As he slides down the wavy grooves of the statue's hair, he drives his blades through the copper. Inside, the blades pierce the wall near Jean's face. Now, the towering statue stands starkly against the night sky, a broken point on her crown. At her ear, the small figure of Logan struggles. Now, in the torch, Eric drops to the floor. Wide-eyed, Marie trembles, her hands gripping the metal posts. Down below, Sabretooth brings his face close to Storm's.
You owe me a scream.
Logan drops in behind him.
Hey, Bob. I'm not finished with you yet.
The torch shatters, revealing Marie inside Eric's spinning mutator.
Jean?
Scott, when I tell you, open your eyes.
No, trust me.
You dropped something.
As Logan lets go of Scott's eye band, Jean floats it over to his eyes.
No.
Scott's laser streams through the floating band into Sabretooth, blasting him out of the statue's head. As Eric watches, Sabretooth crashes through the cabin of the motorboat. Up in the statue, Logan frees Scott.
Thanks. Don't mention it. Gotta get her out of there. Cyclops, can you hit it? The rings are moving too fast.
Just shoot it. I'll kill her.
Storm, can you get me up there?
I can't control it like that. You could fly right over the torch.
Then let me go. If I don't make it, then at least you can still blast the damn thing. All right, do it. Jean, use your power. Try to steady him.
Hang on to something.
Holding out her arms, Storm stares up at the torch. her eyes turn milk white, then glow as a wind whips through the space, picking up speed. Logan rises on the wind as Jean holds up a hand, directing his path. Logan turns in the air, flailing his arms as he passes above the ring spinning around Marie. As Eric watches, Logan grabs the top of the mutating machine and hangs in a headstand above Marie. Slowly, he lowers himself onto the curved metal prong that extends, like a diving board, over the spinning horseshoe shape. Below, white-hot light engulfs Marie. Like a net thrown in slow motion, the mass of light drops down over the arm of the statue. Logan jumps into it, landing next to Marie. He shoots out his knuckle blades, and Eric reaches up, forcing the blades away from Marie's shackles. Below, bathed in brilliant light, Scott touches his earpiece.
Scott, wait!
Eric's hand holds steady in the swirl of light, bending Logan's blades into curving claws. Marie grimaces, her brown hair streaked with white. Across the bay, the crowd on Ellis Island looks with alarm at the white-hot glow enveloping the top of the statue. Inside the light, Logan strains against Eric's pull. The massive net of light spreads across the bay toward Ellis Island. The international guests run as the electromagnetic globe breaks over the seawall like a tidal wave.
Gene, I have to!
Just wait!
Logan muscles his free hand toward Marie.
I have a shot. I'm taking it.
As Scott turns his earpiece, a red laser blasts Eric in the back. Logan twists against a flaming arc of current. The spinning horseshoe prongs explode into pieces, and the advancing net of light disappears. Inside the statue, Jean looks down, blinking her eyes in disbelief. Later, a helicopter circles high above the statue, and police boats motor across the bay. Up in the ruins of the torch, Logan slashes through Marie's shackles, then holds the unconscious young woman close to him. Wild-eyed and frowning, he fingers the white streaks in her hair and stares at her closed eyes. Eyes locked on her, Logan grits his teeth. Holding her in one arm, he brings his free hand to his mouth and tugs off his glove. His bare hand hovers over her cheek. Closing his eyes, he touches her face. Logan opens his eyes to the smooth skin of Marie's sleeping face. Wincing, he lowers his head and rests it against her chin. He smooths her hair, then draws her head against his chest. Frowning back tears, Logan suddenly opens his eyes. Veiny ridges crisscross his face, and his mouth drops open. Slowly, the ridges open into red gashes. A trickle of blood runs from a seam in his black leather jumpsuit. Marie, her face veined with ridges, opens her eyes. They widen, and she shoves him away. The skin on her face smooths. The wind tosses her streaked hair as she stares at Logan, who lies on his back with his eyes closed. 20 feet below, the dark, caped figure of Eric sprawls on the torch base. Above Eric, Logan's head hangs out over the edge of the platform. Blood stripes his gashed face. At the base of the statue, armed men race through the museum, where a security guard lies motionless on the floor.
Hey, this one's alive. Let's get him out of here.
Three puncture wounds bleed through the guard's shirt. Up in the torch, Eric turns his head and watches as the sleek jet turns from its hover at the torch and flies into the night sky. Later, the deep blue eyes of Charles blink open as he lies on a gurney, electrodes strapped to his bald head.
Welcome back. I knew you'd find your way.
I have you to guide me. How did we do?
Jean's smile fades as she turns to a gurney next to them. Gashes on his face, Logan lies unconscious under a maze of tubes and wires. Jean gingerly touches his face, then checks the gauze that wraps his chest. Under the bloody bandage, she finds smooth, healed skin. With a faint smile, she lifts a large bandage from his stomach. As she touches a line of soft hair, Logan takes her hand.
Oh, that tickles.
She smiles down at his healed face.
Fantastic.
That was a brave thing you did.
Did it work?
Yeah. She's fine. She took on a few of your more charming personality traits for a while. But we lived through it. I think she's a little taken with you.
Well, you can tell her my heart belongs to someone else. How's the professor?
He's good.
Good.
Logan brings her hand to his lips and kisses it. Later, with Charles.
There's an abandoned military compound at Alkali Lake in the Canadian Rockies, close to where we found you. There's not much left, but you might find some answers.
Thank you.
Are you going to say goodbye to them?
In the TV room, Marie plays foosball with Bobby.
The Mutiny Registration Act lost its main proponent today with the dramatic reversal of Senator Robert Kelly, who until this time had provided the loudest voice in the cry for mutant registration.
I was wrong in this particular issue, and I hope in time I may be forgiven. Thank you.
The senator's eyes glow yellow. Storm pauses the video.
Mystique.
Son of a bitch.
From many parents' rights groups who feel threatened by unidentified mutants in their school systems.
Logan peers in from the hallway at Marie. Carrying a rucksack over his shoulder, he goes out the door. Marie glances at Bobby, then runs after Logan.
Hey!
Frowning, he turns. Marie, wearing elbow-length gloves and a shimmery scarf, steps closer.
You running again?
Not really. Have some things to take care of up north.
She smiles and stands close to him. He reaches up and touches her streak of white hair.
I kind of like it.
Logan nods and looks away.
I don't want you to go.
Logan looks off with a scowl, then reaches for the chain around his neck. He puts his dog tag in Marie's glove and closes her fingers around it. She gazes up with soft brown eyes.
I'll be back for this.
He turns and leaves. Marie looks down at her hand, then up at the closed door. Outside, Logan steps through a courtyard gate and looks to his right. A chrome and black motorcycle sits outside the carriage house. Grinning, Logan looks back over his shoulder. Later, Logan rides the cycle through the academy's wrought iron gates, passing a plaque on the pillar. Xavier School for Gifted Youngsters, Westchester County, New York. An X marks the top of the plaque. Now a prison guard walks down a tube of clear plastic. Inside, two hands move chess pieces on an acrylic board.
Doesn't it ever wake you in the middle of the night? The feeling that someday they will pass that foolish law, or one just like it, and come for you and your children.
Charles looks up. Eric returns his glance.
It does indeed.
Looking down at the glimmering pieces, Eric takes a pawn with his knight.
What do you do when you wake up to that? I feel a great swell of pity for the poor soul who comes to that school looking for trouble.
The guard enters the clear acrylic room, walks over to Charles, and takes hold of his plastic wheelchair.
Why do you come here, Charles?
Why do you ask questions to which you already know the answers?
Yes. Your continuing search for hope.
The two men lock eyes. Then Eric nods and the guard wheels Charles away. As he draws shoulder to shoulder, Charles looks into Eric's weathered face.
You know this plastic prison of theirs won't hold me forever. The war is still coming, Charles, and I intend to fight it. By any means necessary. And I will always be there, old friend.
The guard rolls Charles through the clear round door. Dressed in white cotton, Eric glances down at a king chess piece and knocks it over. In the clear round tube, the guard rolls Charles in his chair. Behind them, a clear circular door seals. Now the tube hanging on strings collapses and pulls away from the suspended acrylic cell. Fade to black. This film has been described by Descriptive Video Service, a division of the Media Access Group of WGBH, with funding by the U.S. Department of Education. Described by Carol Hostutler. Read by Miles Neff. For more about DVS, call toll-free 1-800-333-1203 or visit our website, dvs.wgbh.org. Credits appear. Directed by Brian Singer. Screenplay by David Hayter. Story by Tom DeSanto and Brian Singer. Produced by Lauren Shuler Donner and Ralph Winter. Executive producers, Avi Arad and Stan Lee. Executive producers, Richard Donner and Tom DeSanto. Director of Photography, Newton Thomas Siegel, ASC. Production designer, John Meyer. Edited by Steven Rosenblum, Kevin Stitt, and John Wright, ACE. Co-producers, Joel Simon and William S. Todman, Jr. Visual effects supervisor, Michael Fink. Special makeup design, Gordon Smith. Music by Michael Kamen. Starring Patrick Stewart, Hugh Jackman, Ian McKellen, Halle Berry, Famke Janssen, James Marsden, Bruce Davison, Rebecca Romaine Stamos, Ray Park, and Anna Paquin. The Donners Company, Bad Hat Harry Production, a Brian Singer film. Cast: Hugh Jackman as Logan Wolverine, Patrick Stewart as Xavier, Ian McKellen as Magneto, Famke Janssen as Jean Grey, James Marsden as Cyclops, Halle Berry as Storm, Anna Paquin as Rogue, Tyler Mayne as Sabretooth, Ray Park as Toad, Rebecca Romaine Stamos as Mystique, Bruce Davison as Senator Kelly, Matthew Sharp as Henry Gyrick, Brett Morris as Young Magneto, Rona Schechter as Magneto's mother, Kevin McGregor as Magneto's father, Sean Roberts as Rogue's boyfriend, Donna Goodhand as Rogue's mother, John E. Nellis as Rogue's father, George Buza as Trucker, Darren McGuire as Contender, Carson Manning as Waterboy number one, Scott Leva as Waterboy number two, Aaron Tager as MC, Kevin Rushton as Stu, Doug Lennox as bartender, David Nichols as newscaster number one, Malcolm Nevsky as Stu's buddy, Sumella Kay as Kitty, Sean Ashmore as Bobby, Katrina Florence as Jubilee, Alexander Burton as John, Quinn Wright as Lily Pond Kid, Daniel Magder as Boy on Raft, Matt Weinberg as Tommy, Madison Lank as Tommy's sister, Stan Lee as Hot Dog Vendor, Marcia Graham as newscaster number two, Amy Leland as Cerebro, Adam Robitel as Guy Online, Dave Brown as lead cop, Ben P. Jensen as Sabretooth Cop, Tom DeSanto as Toad Cop, Todd Dolmetsch as Coast Guard, Dan Duran as newscaster number three, Elias Zarou as UN Secretary General, David Black as President, Robert R. Snow as Secret Service, David Hayter as Museum Cop, Cecil Phillips as Security Guard, Dave Allen Clark as newscaster number four, Derek Blake as Plastic Prison Guard. Translators: Ilke Hincher, Ron Sham, Jay Yu, Grigori Miyakuchkine, Eleanor Combs, Giuseppe Galaccio, Rupinder Brar, and Abi Ghanem. German soldiers: Joey Pupura, Manuel Verge, Wolfgang Mueller, Ralph Zulian, and Andy Grote. Copyright 20th Century Fox Film Corporation. X-Men character likenesses, copyright 2000, Marvel Characters Incorporated, all rights reserved.